Hello and welcome back to All My Darlings, where we are finishing up Marguerite Young's Angel in the Forest. We're on page 312, and we're reading the second part of Builder of Old Harmony. It's about four pages. At home, the annexation of new territory in the American Southwest had caused much anger among the opponents of Negro slavery. The nation was about to split into two pieces. The industrial North, which worshipped the progress of big business, the agrarian South, which justified slavery on the ground that it was saving the Negro souls. There was capitalism above the Mason-Dixie line, and there was feudalism beneath it. Yet for perhaps the great mass of men, the question of Negro liberation was the only one. When Stephen Douglas, defender of the conversion of new states into slave territory, visited Chicago to speak in behalf of his views, flags in the harbor were lowered to half-mast, and church bells tolled in mournful elegy for the Negro race. Everywhere Stephen Douglas went, he found himself hanged in effigy. The Western Democrat, in the midst of his spiritual researches, was called home from Naples to aid in the progress of material events. Though his brief case was filled with papers to prove the unreality of materialism and the identification of his subconscious mind with eternity, never in fact was any ship so heavily laden with spiritual beings as that which carried the Western Democrat homeward. So this is really awesome, or funny, or just weird, that Robert Dale went into spiritualism, deep dive into spiritualism, back at that time. It's just really interesting because he was an Indiana senator, which I just think wouldn't be, well, I wish it were tolerated. I wish something made these politicians different than what they are. Oh my gosh. But anyways, okay, the Western Democrat homeward, never were there so many unlisted passengers, so many kings, clowns, corpses, so many eyes imagine themselves ears. While Abraham Lincoln faced the cheering multitudes at Cooper Institute, the lately returned minister sat in the darkened parlor of a Broadway boarding house, demanding peace at any price, and saw spirit flowers plucked out of the air by spirit hands. Oh, fields of asphodel! Only the men whose limbs had been blown into space know what war is, they said, and therefore they advocated the ideal of an everlasting peace, even though this should mean the continuation of Negro slavery. Abraham Lincoln had spent his boyhood at Dusty Pigeon Creek, a lonesome hollow. None of the factors in his life could quite account for him. As a hawk-eyed, dreamy boy and young man, however, navigating the Wabash River, he doubtless touched on the shore of two utopias, the Rappite and the Owenite, and both so distant. Abraham Lincoln and Robert Dale were two great immigrants from the pocket country, who had left it at about the same time, as one biographer of the Western Democrat remarked, though Abe had been raised up among bean-growing squatters and had seen much violence. When the awful form of disunion darkened the national threshold, both were willing to submit to slavery if need be in order to preserve our national existence intact. With both, the paramount object then became to save the Union and neither to save nor destroy slavery. If they could have saved the Union without freeing any slaves, they would have done so. If they could have saved it by freeing some and leaving others, also they would have done that. It was not that they hated slavery the less, but that they loved the Union more. Robert Dale lent his rhetoric to the service of conciliation. For myself, while the sword remains undrawn, while kindred blood remains unshed, never shall I despair of the Republic. While there is peace, there is hope, for peace is the life of the Union. So this is really interesting, especially in today's, because of what's going on in the country today. Because you have just wacko crazy Republicans who were Democrats at that time. Let's remember, the parties were reversed at the time. So I think Lincoln was a Republican at the time. So the parties were reversed when the Civil War was fought and slavery was overturned, then the parties reversed themselves. I read the history, but I can't remember it. Probably to spit it back correctly. But anyways, that's when you see a switch in between Republican and Democrat, because then it was seen as, I don't remember how it came, I don't remember everything it was. But anyways, there was a big shift. So Democrats and Republicans were on, I guess, opposite sides during slavery. And then Republicans being against and Democrats for. And then after it turned, the party lines switched. That's where you get the Republican conservatives, because the Democrats that were for slavery switched to being Republican. And the Republicans that were against slavery switched to being Democrat. So it, it caused a whole flip-flop of the political parties that we have back at that time. So now you have, like, trying to do some reconciliation, again, with the rural parts of this country compared to the urban. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I think the plan was, I mean, I really like the way she laid this out. Like, if they could have, the idea was to keep the Union intact. Abe Lincoln did not want to rule over a divided country. I say rule, he was a president, but still, preside over a divided country. He inherited the entirety of the country, and he, that's what he wanted. So we weren't going to split in half. And so the same debate is going on now. I mean, it's been, through, what, 300 years? And so the debate has come up again because of the conciliations that were made to the rural parts of this country, largely white, largely, I guess, racist, white supremacist, Christian nationalists. I mean, like, all the bad shit. And so I guess the hope was, hey, with education and progress, progressivism, I saw there's a sign on one of the businesses as I'm driving down one of the main streets and where I live that says no communism, no progressivism, no socialism. Just like, shit, dude, come on. Progress, no progress, absolutely no progress. So it just doesn't make any sense. But because concessions were made to bring them back into being one union, and never mind that, like, true equality, civil liberties, were not realized. Those things weren't realized. The civil rights didn't happen until 1965. Like, those things were not realized. That was just the tip of the iceberg. So, to have us grappling yet again with all this, but the only thing I have, I mean, like, how can bring this country back together? I don't know. Massive anti-racist stuff, which we're trying to do, which with is, I guess, the critical race theory. I don't know. I'm out of education, so I'm out of all of that. But, like, trying to go against, I can only imagine it'll bite them in the butt, but who am I? But they are the minority. Make no mistake. I don't care how loud they scream. I don't care how loud they, or how often they gerrymander districts or suppress voters, like voter suppression, or try cheat, steal, lie, whatever they are trying to do. The Republicans right now in this country are the minority. They are the minority with capital M. They do not have the votes. Hence why they're having to do everything that they're doing to win elections, because they are not, it's not a valid party anymore. It just isn't. Okay, sorry. War broke out in spite of all the reasons which could be brought against it, and in spite of all the spirits communicating with Robert Dale. Yep. 2 years after the execution of John Brown, Northern soldiers were inspired by his martyrdom to march to their own graves, however reluctantly, in rotted uniforms and paper shoes provided by Chicago mercantile interests, merchandise probably intended to last just about as long as the wearer. Ships loaded with Northern farm boys who had never seen the ocean before went down in the ocean before a single cannon could be fired, doubtless because they were built for the greatest happiness of the smallest number. Oh, gosh. Doubtless because they were built for the greatest happiness of the smallest number, that is, the usual Wall Street vultures. They were the ones who wanted to blow Baltimore and the South off the map. The irony of fate was such that Robert Dale, spiritualist and pacifist, found himself appointed munitions agent of the state of Indiana to purchase gunpowder and material arms from Germany. For the big boys in Berlin were already already active, Republicans seeing this plum fall into the hands of a Democrat were dismayed. Republicans felt that the misty, mystic Democrat might be more concerned with the inflammation of spirits than with ammunition to blow up Atlanta, more concerned with disembodiment than with forcing the fortified entrance at Mobile Bay. As so often happens, they were mistaken. The spirits, though disembodied, were most cooperative, presenting a united front. As a result of Robert Dale's enforced activities, many Confederate soldiers progressed to another sphere, a better world than this, and many Yankee soldiers found that his old clothes adhered to him like sin itself. Rank upon rank, proud regiments of both the South and North were thinned, having at least this much in common after all. How justify the sacrifice of multiple consciousness and memories, the huge carnage of war, the human beauty resolved to chaos? Without slavery, Abraham Lincoln declared, the rebellion never would have existed. Without slavery, it could not continue. Yet he feared that a premature emancipation of the Negro might alienate the border states and give 50,000 bayonets from them over to the rebels. For a while, emancipation seemed to hang in the balance. There's something here that reminded me of... Sorry. I'll try not to rant again. Oh, I was saying that when they're talking about how the North and South, the regiments on both sides died. And the one I heard was like... The one thing I heard, this was pertained... It pertains to war. But this was done with the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, and that the mother said, the blood that soaks the ground is the same color. Doesn't matter what your race is, doesn't matter who you belong to, nation, whatever. The blood that soaks the ground is the same color. And that's always sat with me as a quote. Robert Dale wrote to Abraham Lincoln, probably at the dictation of spiritual beings in an abolitionist boarding house, but also because he remembered Utopia. Shall the North have sacrificed 100,000 lives and 2,000 millions of treasure to come to that at last? Not even a guarantee of peace purchased at so enormous a cost? Yeah, because we absolutely did not purchase peace. After voluntary exertions on the part of our people, to which the history of the world furnishes no parallel, is the old root of bitterness still to remain in the ground, to sprout and bear fruit in the future as it has borne fruit in the past? Not only was there the just cause of freeing the Negro, but also the great fame which Abraham Lincoln might reap in the eyes of the world, the great praise. If you are tempted by an imperishable name, it is within your reach. Such an offer comes to no human being twice. Abraham Lincoln said of this letter, its perusal thrilled me like a trumpet call. 5 days later, in the midst of the tragic elements, the wild inclemencies, that war which is also anarchy, the preliminary proclamation was announced, with the utter quietude of God when he created the world, but the world was still uncreated. Certain gentlemen in high places were trying desperately to revive a scheme for compromise with slavery. Let's remember, capitalism always needs slavery. I mean, they're calling slavery, and absolutely that's a different thing as far as the slavery that was going on in the South. But capitalism itself absolutely relies on slave labor. They built plenty of things in the North as well. A number of political figures were quite willing to reorganize the Union, omitting the New England states, though New England had been the greatest opponent to Negro slavery to begin with, and also its forefather. So that in the midst of the war, as so often happens, it seemed that the goal was changing. Robert Dale opposed with all the might of his oratory this diversion. Spiritual beings, which had previously been apologists for slavery, now warned him of the impossibility of a compromise with slavery. A voice speaking out of the cloud, a certain ex-tobacco, hi, little boy. Lay down. You can't even see out that window. Okay, hopefully. Oh. We'll settle down. Okay, if you hear a loud bang, it's because he's decided to do something. A voice speaking out of the cloud, a certain ex-tobacco salesman with bleeding hands cried out his warning, all should be free, or all were slaves. Robert Dale wrote, let Indiana, selling freedom's birthright for less than Esau's price, resolve to purchase southern favor by northern dismemberment, and the worldwide contempt that would follow it. But let her know, before she enters the path of destruction, that her road will lie over the bodies of her murdered sons, past prostrate cabins, past ruined farms, through all the desolation that fire and sword can work. Let her know that before she can link her fate to a system that is as surely doomed to ultimate extinction as the human body is, finally destined to death, there will be a war within her own borders to which all we have yet endured will be as but the summer's gale that scatters a few branches over the highway compared to the hurricane that plows its broad path of ruin, mile after mile, leaving behind in its track prostrated forest, harvest crops uprooted, and human habitations overthrown. There is a really great book, and I'm going to try and find it. And the author, she's half Hawaiian. Like, her mother's Hawaiian, but her father's from Alabama. And so she wrote an excellent family tale, on her father's side, her father's family's tale during the Civil War. It's a fictional book, but she incorporated her family's history during the Civil War in Alabama. It was amazing. Very, very well done book. I'll try and find the author's name and title. After the Civil War was over, what happened? Peace was handed down from heaven. Many an old oak tree had stood the gale of time. There were numerous cripples. Walt Whitman saw the face of Jesus Christ everywhere. Otherwise, there was disunion. It was also a problem what to do with the Negro, how to dispose of him. Robert Dale, who had fought to free the Negro, opposed his immediate suffrage, political or economic. The Negro, before he could use the ballot, must be taught to read and write, though Andrew Jackson was no great scholar. The Negro must be suspended, as it were, between slavery and freedom until he could learn to stand on his own two feet as a person fully responsible for the formation of his own character and destiny. Many years to come, alas, many a Negro in the South would be suspended by a rope, with his feet somewhat above the ground, but that is another story. The overwhelming fact is that the Civil War ended with the Civil War. Robert Dale was haunted by his conscience. He regretted the part he had played in the Mexican War. Perhaps the spirits had shown him his vast mistake, and Washington, the Western Democrat and former minister to the gilded drawing rooms of gilded despots, wore a Mexican sombrero to advertise his change of heart. He was known among Republicans as that Mexican. He urged the United States support the struggling Juarez Republic of Mexico. He tried to float a bond for the relief of Mexico, to be described to by public-spirited American taxpayers. Democracy, the spirit said, must exist everywhere or nowhere. The murder of Maximilian was unfortunate but necessary to the march of progress. It was sad that Carlotta should be locked up in an empty room. There must be, however, in the Western Hemisphere, not even the ghost of a crown. No one was more vocal on the subject than the Emperor Constantine, ferried over the Gulf, fixed between the dead and living by faceless slaves with lustrous pinions and American flags. To some, the Western Democrats' constant quotations of the Bible at every turn of the corner in Washington seemed, like a sombrero, evidence of a diseased intellect. He was becoming, with each step, more and more devoted to the Catholic Church and its many vulnerable sepultures out of which the soul arises to wing its way joyfully toward the throne of heaven. The spirits differed from the saints, he said, only in that they were more Catholic, being confined to no particular denomination or sphere. Quite often the simplest character, such as a certain fugitive slave with a thorn in his foot, would accompany the noblest also in flight, such as Gabriel. When opposed as to his views on the existence of non-existent beings, such as tobacco-spitting peddlers and lovelorn housemaids, who somehow had attained to the status of saints, he replied with utmost serenity, "Time, the great teacher, will decide between us. 10 years, probably less, will see the question determined." For a time, Robert Dale dropped out of the national picture. During the Civil War Reconstruction, when carpetbaggers rifled the South, that scene of fire burned earth and desolation, Robert Dale retired in the pocket country, devoted himself to the building of New Harmony, a little nearer to the heart's desire. It was, however, though a better New Harmony than this, merely a fiction, an aggregate of sonorous words. Beyond the breakers, the story of a town and all the people in it. Chicksaga, a better New Harmony, was made up of at least one palatial household. The characters, at least the good ones, enjoy the serenity of those figures depicted on Grecian urns. Their hounds never moved, their buckets were not broken at the well. Franklin Sydenham, or Robert Dale, a cosmopolitan intellectual, a little world-weary, had returned from European capitals to become the chief benefactor of Chicksaga, or New Harmony. His entire aim was to convert Chicksaga into the reminiscence of Italy. Unlike Robert Dale, as he was happily fictitious character in a happily fictitious world, He was able to introduce many Italian relics and to institute, in spite of backward elements, a sewage system. Also, though opposed by conservatives and diehards, he built a canal to connect church and brewery streets with the Wabash, the outer world. There were a few wandering fools. There were many inferior characters. Amos Clare, a dishonest lawyer in Chicksaga, had been Amos Cranston, a dishonest lawyer in New Harmony. Elijah Embry, or Elijah Emberly, was a Republican and a scoundrel in both towns. The good horse Marmaluke was the good horse Marmaluke. There was a hunter of exotic insects and shells, none other than Thomas Say, devoid of Thomas Say. There was a faint suspicion of old Neef blowing a trumpet at the board line. There were a few characters who had got to Chicksaga by accident. A Quaker martyr to luxury stood under the golden rain trees of Chicksaga, or New Harmony, a still unhappy citizen, as wherever he went he always arrived too late or too early for Utopia. Life in Chicksaga was a perpetual English Sunday, a division of the wheat from the tares. Beyond the breakers was but a diversion from the greater task at hand, though in Chicksaga there were few miracles, and perhaps none in New Harmony, there were miracles elsewhere. The debatable land between this world and the next recorded them. The book was a sensation in the publishing world. Nothing like this had dawned on the national horizon before. Every thoughtful reader should own a copy. It blew away the dust of ages. There were numerous wild advertisements. The debatable land, according to Mrs. Harriet Beecher Stowe, was a spiritual counterpart to Darwin's materialistic voyage of a naturalist. It dealt with the soul as Darwin had dealt with bodies. Whereas Darwin had written of sea rocks whitened by dung of white seabirds and colonies of seals and butterflies blown on a gale 500 miles out to sea, Robert Dale had added the missing half, that was to say, man's immortal nature. Facts more far-reaching in their consequence to man on the eternal quest than Darwin's citation of flowers, which have a rudimentary sense of memory. Instances and proof of angelic guardianship more wonderful than old baboons who never yet had swung between two stars, more wonderful than cherry-colored spiders, and every miracle someone had been eyewitness to. Herein was shown also the significance of dreams in history, the dreams of Abimelech, Pharaoh, Saul, Solomon, Nebuchadnezzar, and all those who had broken out with sweat like cold dew, the testimony of Elihu, that in slumbering upon the bed, God openeth the eyes of men and sealeth their instructions. On what occasions did spiritual beings return to earth? Instances of these. A man returned to earth to warn his son against extravagance. A servant girl returned to obtain her letters to her lover. Many returned to lament the decay of old houses. Robert Dale might have been a great student of the supernatural natural, but it had not been for his enthusiasm, his desire for the immediate revelation. Wanting the empirical evidence for each meta-empirical event, he went to mediums. None were so feather-brained as they seemed. He paid $2 for every revelation that man might exist in a bodiless state. Such a spiritualism was very different from the philosophy of spirit he thought he was arriving at. Perhaps Bishop Berkeley's contention that all things, all the furnitures of earth and choirs of heaven, are ideas upheld in the mind of God. Robert Dale paid $2 to see the table upheld by nothing. What he required was a sudden disjoining of the events in God's mind, and the medium, with their concealed ropes and pulleys, were ideally situated for that transaction, the deceiving him to believe what he saw. Deceiving him to believe what he saw. His particular craft was destined, like his father's before him, to be wrecked upon the shoals and rocks of human nature. At seances in the home of the American mediums, Mr. and Mrs. Holmes, there was much ribald joking among the spirits, none of whom seemed to have approximated the nature of divinity. They were drunks in a seaman's tavern, or traders in explosive. One recited poems described to the posthumous spirit of Edgar Allan Poe. They're way more talkative than what's on the paranormal shows now. He had not changed his style. However, had not Robert Dale always believed that man's character accompanies him from sphere to shining sphere like sin itself? Oh, crap. My cats are knocking things over downstairs. Okay, I'm almost done with this chapter. The spirits were sensationalists, though out of their senses. One rode on a scared horse. Another planned to lay an Atlantic cable, whereby to connect the voice of London with the voice of New York, though this should certainly contribute to the world's madness. Spirit was planning to do something that had already been done. Still another, a diamond-studded gambler, was stalking his prey throughout eternity. Every once in a while, he belched. There was a gentleman whose invisible body could be apprehended by the fact that his visible watch and chain. This gentleman stood perfectly still in space. Most active spirit, Kate King, habitue of cosmic semen, made her appearance on both sides of the Atlantic, depending on Robert Dale's location, for they were remarkably fond of each other. Portraits, the works of cynics, showed that her English face was quite different from the one she presented in America. In fact, Katie had no harmony at the center. It was not one Katie, but two, both fat and lean, both fair and dark. There was no way, evidently, to reconcile the two as one, ever, in time and space. She was an abused servant girl in London, and she was an abused servant girl in New York. Alas, for the best of plans. Holmes, who had so often produced Katie at will, was unable to produce a much less miraculous matter, a bank account. Having counterfeited the true spiritual being, he proceeded to manufacture the coin of the realm, much less successfully, for the United States Treasury was not gullible. Holmes was thrown into jail, where the spirit of Katie doubtless twittered. Robert Dale, who had publicized Katie in the columns of the Atlantic Monthly, found it hard to give her up to nothingness. Katie was Katie, whose manifestations he had so often reported. Katie was a leaping flame to whom no ordinary standards of measurement could apply. If she had crossed the gulf between the living and dead, what obstacle is the Atlantic? Wherever there was a luminous soul, he would find his lodging in Katie. Why should she not be both fair and dark? Spontaneity was ever the chief characteristic of spiritual beings. In a perfectly empty room, he had felt her hand brushing against his knee. The nation was profoundly shocked by the credulity of a man who had been a leader in public affairs of the greatest importance to its history. Suppose that, while advising others, he himself had been advised by Katie. There was such a little song which went the rounds among his political enemies in Washington and non-believers everywhere. Said Robert Dale to Katie King, "I think I hear an angel's wing." Said Katie King to Robert Dale, "It's nothing but an old man's wail." Okay, two more chapters. Let me see. Oh, I don't remember that book. I don't have a clue. I just remember what the book's about, but I don't have a clue where to begin to find the name of her. Oh, well. Okay, that's it. Thank you for listening. Bye.